lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back for another episode of the Motorsport Republic podcast. And if you're watching, you'll notice that that is not Tom.
No pumpkin on this head.
Mr. Mark Bandana Man Danby, good friend of the pod. Thank you for filling in for Tom, who is actually here, behind the camera, and extremely sick and has basically lost his voice. Tommy.
Hey, guys. Tommy Shavs here. Danby, thanks for filling in.
I got this call this morning. He goes, hello, what's happening? What are you doing tonight? I'm like, what is wrong with you? I lost my voice.
I didn't think that everyone would want to hear me for an hour talking like this, so... We've got the expert F1 person in, so I'm here for special comments if we dare to come over here.
It's very funny if you listen to last week's podcast because I was extremely sick and had a very, very bad voice the whole episode. For a week and a half, like, it's just been going around. Everyone's been sick, and I only just got over it a couple of days ago. I drank about 15 beers on Saturday night, and the toxins killed everything, so I kind of woke up upright on Sunday. And
I imagine you're both out sick. What's going to happen? Then we get Curtis on the show.
Well, yeah, it might have been a single Curtis episode.
Wow. Imagine it's coming. It is coming.
All the helmets behind us have Pikachu things on them, covers on them. Tommy's pissed himself. The whole thing would change. It'd be an anime episode. Gertie. We will have T-Shavs. I can't look at Tom. This is killing me. We will have T-Shavs and special comments for a lot of the episode tonight. And Mr. Bandana Man, thank you again for coming on. It's great to see you.
Always help out, guys. Always happy to help out.
It's always good to have your insight. You've obviously been to, 100 and how many Grand Prix?
We're up to 372, aren't we now?
In Thailand, it kept running up. But what was it? What's it actually? 160 something, isn't it?
170. 170,
there you go.
Yeah, 18, I don't know.
As always, shout out to motorheaven.com.au. Without them, we would not be doing what we're doing. So head to motorheaven.com.au and bikeheaven.com.au for the best website, best motorcycle accessories online store in Australia. Can't beat them. And guys, thank you again for all the love on Spotify, Apple, YouTube. All the listens and views and comments and everything mean the world to us, especially on Instagram and everything as well. Plus, every week we will be doing our Patreon Republica extra chats that we do. It's normally about a half an hour episode, just talking shit about whatever we want, a lot of MotoGP and F1 stuff. So that's good, and I appreciate everyone who signs up for that. It again helps us do what we want to do, which is amazing. All right. Well, we've got a big episode coming up, T-Shavs and Mr. Danby, Baku, big one. And then, obviously, I want to get your thoughts as well for all our MotoGP fans listening.
Lots been happening since.
A lot's been happening since you've been on last. There's a lot to talk about. There's obviously a big weekend coming up with Motegi, so it's it's going to be a good one. Tom, top 10, please.
All right, results everyone. Surprise, Max Verstappen first. Had a pretty dominant weekend.
Yep.
George Russell, great drive in second. Amazing, the smooth operator, third. Carlos Sainz. Kimi Antonelli, fourth. Liam Lawson, fifth. Amazing weekend for him. Yuki Tsunoda, sixth. Lando Norris, seventh. What could have been for him?
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton, eighth. Charles Leclerc, ninth. And Isaac Hadjar rounding out the top 10.
Big one. And I guess a massive, massive, massive missed opportunity. And I think it was a first chance for McLaren to get the constructors' title and had a horrendous weekend, but a massive missed opportunity for Lando as well.
Yeah, look, I mean, where do you start this weekend and the race? I mean, you know, it became pretty obvious after Friday that apparently the soft tire was no good. And then it was like a seesaw coming into Saturday quali. What was the better tire? The medium, the soft, the medium, and I was just reading up a bit about it today, and they were saying that both Leclerc and Hamilton wanted the opposite combination. So they gave mediums to Leclerc, and he wanted softs, and they gave softs to Hamilton, and he wanted mediums. So there was a bit of a kerfuffle there. But look, Baku Street Circuit, it always produces some kind of madness, this place. It just does. We've seen that tyre blowout from Max Verstappen many years ago. We saw that controversial thing when behind the pace car when Vettel rammed into Hamilton, if you remember that one. Lewis overjumping the start on the restart probably helped cost them the championship that year. So, yeah, it's just for a street circuit, you know, obviously the fastest one there. But, you know, I got a message from Tom last night after the race, and yeah, he nailed it. You know, that track is a cock tease, pure and simple, because how can you have a 2 kilometre straight and no passing?
Mm.
Like, those last 15 laps, we were expecting something to happen. I suppose maybe Norris was supposedly going to pass one of those cars, but to me, the driver of the race was definitely Lawson. For 15, 16 laps, he's had no DRS, he's got no defence, and it's a headwind, and he's held off those cars.
Mm.
It's wrong. It's wrong in the sense that it was almost like a high-speed Monaco, because they've obviously got the DRS zone wrong. That should have been a bit earlier, because I'll say it again, how can you have a 2 kilometre straight and there's no passing?
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, but look, the results, Max, what a driving quality to get the pole. Sainz, again, holding on that Williams like he did. But, yeah, disappointing, like you said, for Lando, missed opportunity, but I think that's more the team than him. I mean, he stuffed up the restart. Clearly,
yeah, he was caught napping, wasn't he?
He was asleep at the wheel there. But again, that McLaren pit stop, the 2 seconds there, probably puts him out in front of Lawson, and then he can chase after Antonelli, maybe get 4 or 5 more points. Will it make a difference in him? We'll wait and see. But yeah, just Oscar, I mean, what do you do? Here's this ice cool Melbournean that we all love. He's shown all year just to be nonchalant. Nothing bothers him, and in the space of 24 hours, he's made 3 major errors. Like the 2 crashes, like I thought when they showed, I'm like, is this yesterday's crash? It just looked bizarre to me when he crashed. But the whole stalling on the grid and then activating the anti-stall, that was pretty panic. A bit of a panic there for that. But I don't know, is it all getting to him? I don't know. The closer you get to the goal and the dream, the more nervous you become.
Yeah.
So. I don't know, it was just a real weird thing from him this weekend.
It was. Like, look, everyone has their weekends and everyone has their moments. And it's probably the first time we've seen Oscar have that moment where, you know, it doesn't go right for him, or maybe he cracks under pressure. Really, like, it will happen to him, and it's going to happen to everyone. It just does.
To me, the odd thing was, like, you got to get a jail-free card on Saturday with Lando not qualifying well. And the fact that there was only 1 space in front of him on the grid... Well, okay, probably had every chance to pass him in the race, if not the first corner, but it's almost like he was acting like Norris was on pole and he was way, way ahead of him, because just then, that's the bit that gets me. It was more the crash, trying to follow Hülkenberg around the wide line there, but the fact that his teammate was in front of him and that just set him in this mode of nervousness or whatever to make him stall that car, like... That was the most bizarre thing for me, I think. That was the bizarre thing.
Was it a big missed opportunity for Lando, though? Like, did he have faster pace than finishing 7th or 8th or wherever he finished?
Look, these last 2 tracks, and probably the next one too, you know, these 2 tracks don't really suit the McLaren, okay? The McLaren's advantage is high-speed corners. So we've come from Monza where it's low downforce, and now we're at a street circuit where it's 90 degrees, and then we're going to another street track, Singapore, 90 degrees. So really, I didn't think they were favoured to win these 3 races, but the surprise has been is this rebirth of the Red Bull.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so it's one thing that them maybe not being at the very front, and that's probably why you saw the struggle. He just couldn't pass those cars on those fresh tyres. And so that was probably to their detriment, but really the pit stop, that stuffed them.
Well, that cost him, 2 seconds, which cost him being in front of about 3 cars. Yeah,
but see, I go back to Saturday. Once Oscar crashed in quali, the team panicked. And so this was the qualifying session that went forever. I didn't watch. I was watching bits in here, and then I woke up because I fell asleep, and next minute was still going. And I'm like, what? It went for 2 hours. Apparently 7 red flags, which is a record. But again, street circus. But because there was these long intermissions of gaps between restarting, the track just became green again. So in that last run, when Oscar did crash, Max was out first, was 3/10 slower on the soft tyre, and Lando was 4/10 faster. But again, the difference was track position. So when they went out for their last run, it was obvious to see that you didn't want to be first because the track is so green. And I don't understand why McLaren just panicked. Again, to me, the team is panicking. The team is panicking at the moment because they're doing all this reverse, inverse pit stops, which is not required. There's no need for that crap. And to send Lando out first, it was basically suicidal. He was never going to get the best conditions. And then Max went out last and got pole by 8 tenths or something. I mean, Max is Max. We get that. But that did not help Lando's cause. Mm. You know, he had a chance to get front row. And then next minute, we find him, he's in seventh. So, you know, the team, it's just weird. I've never seen this. Been watching a long time. We've had dominant periods, Ferrari, we've had Mercedes, we've had Red Bull. And sure, they might have had their number one drivers like the Schuh and Vettel and stuff, but this inverted pit stop crap, it's so negative geared. Mm. It's not like the guy they're protecting is 3 seconds behind. Like the one in Monza, Leclerc was like 10 seconds behind or something, and I will pit you first and then we'll change it back. And we saw it at Hungary last year.
Yeah, it's all right.
And we saw the kerfuffle last weekend about, oh, well, you know, he was in front, let him back through. And I just think this is my take on this whole thing, and this might be might have affected Oscar a fraction. I could be wrong, but they're just pummeling these two young drivers into submission. That you do what we say. They're just killing the racing. They're killing that racing instinct by just making these two guys become so robotic about the way they want them not to race or to race and do what we say. And that's it's against the DNA of a race car driver.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. We've actually spoke about this. Doing some editing this morning and listening to that exact part Tom and I were talking about last week or 2 weeks ago. It's almost like, it's funny because talking from an Australian perspective, you know, you're finally seeing an Aussie up there who's winning all these races. He's in a big factory team and it's kind of not that exciting. And then we're trying to think, okay, why is it not that exciting? Like if it's an Aussie, for whatever reason, like normally we're so up and about, but the racing's not there. And the racing's not there because it seems like, as Tom put it, it's being manipulated. Mm. It's kind of being manipulated in front of us, how you kind of put it as well, where you just, there's no racing instinct. There's no hard edge. It's like everything is they can't make
contrived.
They can't make a hard decision. They can't hurt someone's feelings and they're very scared for that. And it's just like someone needs to just have the balls to make that call. And we want, as fans, hard, fair, but hard racing where Lando and Oscar are going to get to a point where it's very tense because they want the exact same thing. And that's just what it is. Yeah. You can't be friends racing for a world title. It does not work.
100%. It just...
It's robbing us of that hard-edged part of sport and hard-edged part of motorsport.
Well, you know, we all get excited when we get if you do get a dominant team, or just teammates in general that are fighting for wins and a world championship, because the expectation comes with it, wow, the explosion is going to happen at some point.
Oh, yeah,
and it seems like they've just brainwashed them into, we won't go anywhere near there. We won't go anywhere. We can't, you know. And I think I mentioned to Tom about a month ago, like, Zach Brown came out and said something like, oh, well, we're going to speak to both drivers about which one of them wins it. Should we celebrate it or should we not celebrate? And that is just the most ridiculous
thing. Jesus, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he's come out and said, oh, we're going to speak to our drivers and ask them, listen, one of us is going to win it, so what do you want? So if you win it, do you want us to celebrate it or should we just keep it low key, you know? And I'm going to myself, what the hell is going on here?
Mm.
Like, of course you celebrate it. I think you might have mentioned this, Tom, in one of them, I think, maybe. But I just, when I read this, I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
This is...
It's fluff.
Well, that's another one word for it. But I just like, you're trying to just keep the peace and, someone build a teepee, and just get the peace pipe out and...
I know. As you said, it kind of goes against racing. It really does. Sport.
Yes. We've had teams and we've seen situations where we have number one drivers. We get that. Barrichello moves over for Schuh and Weber was the patsy for Vettel. We've seen that. We get that. But don't tell us, oh, we've got two number one drivers. We're the two best drivers. And and then behind the scenes or in public, you're basically just numbing it all down.
Yeah.
You're numbing it all down where it just takes all the essence of the stuff, the very reason, which was the fucking TV on in the first place, to see some sort of
collision.
You Claude. The one last week about the reverse pit stop. I mean, and then the fact that Oscar's soundbite was, oh, well, look, he was leading most of the race, so it doesn't, And I'm thinking, listen to the way he's even talking.
Mm.
That's how much he's been brainwashed. Like, oh, well, he did lead most of the race. It wasn't for the win, so really he did deserve that position back. And I'm thinking, I've never heard anybody talk like this.
It's crazy. And what I always say this to Tom as well on the pod is like, you would never see Max do any of that.
Well, again, the mistakes these two guys are making, so two of these equal one Max.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, the overall picture is that these two are still making mistakes. Mm. You know, yeah, sure, Oscar's made three on the weekend. Lando here and there, same again. But you just don't see this from Max Verstappen.
T-Shavs, mate, we all know that you're a Mr. Aprilia. You love riding. I want to know, where do you get your motorcycle gear from?
Mate, there is only one place I get all my gear from,
mm.
apart from the guy down the street, and that's Motor Heaven in Moorabbin, okay? They are a family-owned business, which we love. They always have the best prices, and if I want to get something shipped to my house, it's free delivery over $150. So for me, it's really a no-brainer.
And so you get all the best gear, and then is it better than going to the dumb big corporate chains?
They don't care about you.
No.
You know, you can't call the owner of them to ask questions.
No.
Adrian's always on my phone list, and I can always call him to.
He's always calling you.
He is, definitely.
Yeah, I love it. So head to motorheaven.com.au where you never pay full price. They got all the big brands, super fast dispatch, ship anywhere around Australia. You can get whatever you want.
It's a no-brainer.
No-brainer.
They
won't let it happen.
No, and again, we saw an incident. I just had a quick flashback to a qualifying session in Austria when Ricciardo was teammates, and they were best friends. They were buddies, right? And Ricciardo come on the radio, goes, look, he goes, oh, I got a bit slow out of the pits. Tell Max to let me through. You know, I want to go for my lap. You know, and Max is like, no, that's not the rules.
Mm.
No, I'm not doing it. He goes, it's my turn. Like, and just the affirmative voice of Max on the radio that day, and they're best friends. So, but when it comes to the cop and that advises down, it's fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
And but the deal, he goes, no, that's not right. This is so it wasn't Max going against the agreement, but like he could have said, oh yeah, why not? It was just for a qualifying lap. But again, the principle was there, where Max was like, no, straight. But the way he just shut it down, mm-hmm. I think last year I got a bit excited and hungry when they were telling Lando, oh, you need our help for the championship and please let Oscar back through. And he's like, tell him to catch up. I think this is where it all started.
Yeah, it's
right. That was Oscar's first win. Really good, all the rest of it. But that there was just the inklings of what we're seeing now just unraveling.
Yeah.
It just really is. Like, we have the help, Lando. Have they helped him? Like, oh, you're going to need our help, Lando. You've got pleas. And they're pleading with them. Like, this is the fact that we're hearing this is embarrassing.
Yeah, it is. I just think that one of them just has, it's almost like one of them needs to just have a hard edge on them where it's like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm here for me. I'm going to race my race, which I understand that goes completely against McLaren's philosophy for this year. But it is. It's robbing us of a good championship, and it's just not entertaining. It's not entertaining at all.
Nah.
This is like
fluff.
We want to see
it's
it.
Fluff, yeah, James.
It's fluff. It's all coming. We want to see it all come to a head, and it's definitely not happening. And, you know, and that maybe that's a problem where it's just two teammates going for one title, where it would be so much different if it was McLaren versus Ferrari or something.
Yeah.
You know, because there's you're not going to have any of that. But you know, with two teammates though, it normally gets just as fierce, because as we all know, the first person that you have to beat is your teammate.
Yeah.
So like it normally always ends up in tears anyway. You can look through that over the years.
Yeah. I suppose the hope's even the right word, but the expect, I don't know. But look, Oscar's still got a 25-point lead. There's seven races left. But the scary thing is, this is a bit rerun, almost reminding me of 2007, where the two McLarens, which was Lewis and Alonso, and Lewis is in his rookie year, fighting for wins, fighting for the championship, and they were arguing about their number one status, but that was a bit of a clash. You had the rookie and you had the Latino, the Spaniard, who was just fiery. And in the back door comes at Kimi Raikkonen and just takes the championship. Now, seven races left. Max is on this roll. Still a long way off, but if I'll say it now, if Oscar has one more DNF, it's not that it brings Lando back into it. This will put Max right back into it, front and centre for this championship. And we're seeing panic at the moment on the pit wall for McLaren. If Max goes on a roll and starts winning 3-4 in a row, even from here, that's going to play out big time. Tom?
I'll just bring up the championship standing. So Piastri is leading with 324 points. Norris second with 299. And now Verstappen third, 255. So about 70 points back. But you've also got seven races left, but also three sprint races.
Oh, yeah, true, yeah. So
there's plenty of racing left to go this year.
So has Red Bull found anything?
Yeah, like, they have. So Monza.
The big thing is going to be Singapore in 2 weeks' time because that's been their bogey track the last couple of years. They've obviously got the low downforce down pat the last couple of races, but if they perform well in Singapore, it's on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look at the fire in Tom's eyes. Yeah.
Well, but Tom's basically saying, look, you know, we're sick of this shit show. Pretend we're watching at McLaren. Let's get the fire breathing dragon that is Max Verstappen. Yeah. Just give him a bit of a sniff, and this whole thing will turn on its head.
It's 100%, and it almost pains me to say it as an Aussie, where it's, I almost want to watch that because I need that excitement, and I've always, as a fan, been gravitated to the aggressive. The aggressive driver, the aggressive rider. Like I need to watch someone that takes no prisoners, says fuck you to the whole grid, and it's my championship, and I'm the only one that's going to have it.
You're basically saying, well, this F1 is a gladiator sport. It always has been. And this is why you watch it, because you want to see a gladiator type character come along and just get the sword out and say, fuck
it's almost all. Like Stoner back 07, 09. We still wanted to see Rossi up there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. And like you see it with all the greats. Like we've said it so many times. You've seen with all the greats how they're just ruthless, whether it be Max or the Shoe or Hamilton or Senna or
They go on and on.
Valentino, Mark, like Jorge Lorenzo. Like Jorge Lorenzo came in for MotoGP and didn't care. Copied Rossi's celebration.
Well, he killed himself to try to beat him.
That's right.
All those crashes he had. And
massive crashes and small things. You know, Rossi had the sun and the moon. Jorge Lorenzo had the devil and the angel. Just small things like that. But that's that mental edge people have. And going back to your comment with Max and Danny Rick and Austria qualifying, Max saying, no, I'm not going to lead him past. It's not in the rules. That's mental warfare just as much as it is physical on the track. Yeah. And there's none of that between the two fluffy boys.
Yeah.
And like that is the big thing with sport, is that mental warfare. And psyching out the drivers or the riders just before the lights even go out.
And it's like McLaren are doing everything in their power to remove that.
Yeah.
This is my take. Like the shit I'm hitting, I cringe watching the TV when I hear these pit calls. Oh, look, brake later in turn three. Oh, you lose. I'm like, he's a fucking racing car driver.
Yeah, I know.
That is just, is he going for his learners or something? Like, it's just, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
But this is how they've, and this comes from Stella. This all comes from Stella, the way he runs the team. And, you know, he's implored these ethoses of the way they want them to think and talk to their drivers and stuff. And you hear him post race sometimes, they've just wondered, oh, well, you know, his monotone is just, he's really good at his job, but it's that Ferrari mentality because he's come from Ferrari, you know. So, and that's why I'm starting to call McLaren the new Ferrari. They just find a way to fuck it up somehow. Like they're just, I don't know. Look, this world championship, is it just going to fizzle out? Like, we don't want it to end where it's just after you, Claude. You know, it's going to be very disappointing that for whatever reason, just say we get to the last two races and it is 10 points.
Yeah.
Long way off. You know, Oscar may turn around and go on a run himself, right? Yeah. But, and then we just see this fluff driving, no fighting, and then just in this monotone, oh, well, yeah, mate, you're the world champ. Good on you. It's just going to be anticlimactic.
It's majorly anticlimactic. But surely as if you're Lando, and I don't blame either of them, if it's Lando or Oscar, and you get to the point where you can steal that world championship, you got to be doing it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in 60 years' time when your name's on that trophy and it says Lando Norris or Oscar Piastri, you're the one that's remembered. It's just how it is.
What you said before about Max, almost half wanting to barrack for him because of that gladiator thing. What we want to see is... almost our subconscious. We want to see one of these two guys just basically say, fuck you to the team at some point on the track. Whereas you're going to pit first or he'll go, just go against it.
Yeah.
Because guess what? This is the grand prize.
Yeah.
And even like watching Oscar, he crashed in qualifying and like they're showing me in the garage and he's looking at the camera and he's like, well, he can't show joy that Lando's having a shit lap. Do you get what I mean? Even that sort of stuff. You can just see how he's fighting himself
It's all fluff. Damn it, it's fluff.
I love it from you, James. Fluff. It's all fluff.
Boys, do we reckon it was telling that Oscar didn't go back to the pits after he crashed in the race?
When he was stuck inside the track or whatever it was?
Look, he was on the wrong side of the track, hard to get, but the fact that he's sitting there so That, I think that's a wrong look. That's just my two bobs. I'm a, you know, I know he's Aussie, we love him, all the rest of it, but to me, that's just too relaxed. Like, mate, you're just, you've had your shittest weekend in F1. And you make, not making up, you're just sitting there relaxed with your legs up watching the race on an iPhone. Now, we've seen it in the past with Sainz, we've seen it with Alonso, but these guys weren't going for the world championship. Those other guys, were they, Tom? You know, they're like, well, I'm out the race.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was going to get a third. This guy's win the world championship.
When did Raikkonen walk back to the boat in Monaco? Was that 06?
That was 06. But we knew then he was leaving. We knew then he was not going to beat McLaren. So... the following year, we knew then he that was the fuck you to Ron, big time. Yeah.
It's just disappointing. That's all. It's just, and I think that kind of sums it up. Where he's just chilling there, you know. I'm sure he's bothered, but it's, you can't show any of that. Like, I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Well, there's all these pictures today of when he's walking back to the garage, and he's like walking past a dress shop, and there's a dolly in the window, and they've made these funny memes of him, his journey back, and there was an old lady screaming at him.
I saw it. Tom. He's almost killed Tom. Oh, that's funny. What'd you think of Lawson's race?
Look, he's driver of the race. Yeah. You know, this guy's copped a lot of shit. Red Bull reject, many of them all, but he qualified well. Again, to hold off Tsunoda and those other guys for 15 straight laps.
It's a bit of a DRS train, though. It just causes.
Yeah, but
he's
got no DRS.
I know, but I'm saying it's a DRS train that long straight. And every year it comes up that they say that they need to make it longer.
Look, again, I started off the pod by saying that. So it's all that battery. So they can count it with the battery. Yeah, so if they charge a battery and dump it at a certain point, it counters the DRS. But again, we've got some. It's the most technological sport in the planet, and what you can't work out, we need to extend that DRS a little bit more after Friday practice. So there would have been a way for them to say, well, shit, maybe we need to extend it by 50 metres, because no passing, just, I don't know, I've said it already, I don't want to repeat
it. It's all changing next year with this new battery as well. There's going to be like a push to pass with these new regulations.
Yeah.
So,
and
you'll be able to use it a certain amount of times each. Like,
which is what Indy's got. IndyCar's got that. So.
Oh, really? Is IndyCar got
that? Things are changing next year. No DRS anymore. So
DRS has been in for, 15 years? Roughly? 2010, around those times?
Yeah, I remember the first year they could use it
2010.
Anywhere.
You could use it anywhere in qualifying, remember? Yeah. You could get so sideways through it.
Well, they still do use it. 2011 or 2012?
I reckon it was 10 or 11, because there was a race in Turkey. There was 85 overtakes or some ridiculous amount.
It's like a Moto3 race.
Yeah, it was because they got it so wrong because it was too long and cars were just doing this all race. So those two back straights.
What do we think of Carlos Sainz? I think that was the most amazing weekend and really underrated for Williams as well, because, you know, I love I think what Vowles is doing is great. I think he's gonna he's such a level headed guy.
Good operator.
And I think it's a real boost for them going into next year.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, at one point they looked like it was going to be on pole position.
Yeah.
All these delays, and it started drizzling. And the fact that he still hung on to the front row was very telling as well. But, you know, hang on to the podium. They did expect, you know, a fight for that third before the race started, because they did think one of those McLarens was going to come through. Didn't happen. Russell. This is Russell's best track. It's his best finishes. Like, he's had like four podiums here. Out of all the races he's finished at, this is his best track. So the Merck... it's always been good, even when it was obviously when it was dominating. But you know, great result for Williams. Great, and Sainz needed this, because you know, through the year he's made some silly mistakes, and you know, he's been down
last
and
year
out.
He got taken out or whatever. But he came out and said it was one of his best, if not his best, podium in his whole career.
Yeah, well, because he was fighting hard and tooth and nail every tenth to keep that Merc behind for as long as he could.
Yeah.
What was so strange about the race, and especially with Russell, was the overcut was working.
Yeah,
it was.
Rather than the undercut. Russell stayed out, and they weren't talking about it as much on the commentary as they should have been, because he stayed out on the tyres 15, 16 laps and then actually got ahead of the rest of the next two drivers, which is, it was incredible. You don't see that.
And look, a good result for Kimi, your bloke, Tom. You know, like, he's been under the pump. He qualified Russell.
You're right off him, aren't you?
Say again?
You're right off him, aren't you?
Well, I never was on him. Okay. True. I don't know if I'm right off him, but never thought he was this next Max thing everyone's talking about. Look, he's still young, but we'll see. But, you know, he needed that result because he has been under the pump.
Mm.
Look, My man, Tsunoda, did all right, Tom.
I was about to bring that up. Where did he end up finishing? Was it sixth?
Fifth, yeah, what, sixth, was it?
Sixth place, yeah. Unbelievable. I was thinking about you when I was watching that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Mr. Yuki Tsunoda. Maybe they have found something with Red Bull.
That one, in all seriousness, that just reflects that they found something in this car.
Yeah.
If he's doing okay, then the car must be... Because he... Even that first part of that, no one could pass him. If you looked at those first 30 laps, no one could pass him.
That's right.
Leclerc, no, none of them. They all had to undercut to try and, or overcut to try and get past him. But, I mean...
How have you found that second seat in Yuki Tsunoda's season?
It's a poison chalice, isn't it?
That's right.
It's a poison chalice. And look, does Hadjar... We haven't talked about Hadjar, but, you know, he had a bad quality and he was very frustrated because, you know, if Lawson was fourth, where could have he been? But, you know, do you put him up? Do you really put that kid up?
Problem.
Like, it's a career killer too soon. I don't know. But then do you keep Tsunoda? I don't know.
But the thing with that is, Danby, is with building a car or a bike or whatever it is you need consistency. You need consistency in drivers. You need consistency in riders. And you need the right feedback.
Mm.
And you need consistent feedback. And constantly swapping and changing... personnel isn't gonna get you forward. You need to just stick to one person, whether that's Lawson, Tsunoda, Hadjar, Max. Like it has to. You need to have two drivers in there that's consistent, bringing back consistent information to then build the car. Because as soon as you're swapping people out, it's just Band-Aids. Mm. It's Band-Aids fixing a leak that you're never gonna fix.
That's how they operate, and they know they just want someone to get close to Max. I mean, it's a pretty weird sort of.
We've seen that before in multiple different sports where you have such a dominant driver or rider where you just want your Danny Pedrosa.
Yeah, you do. But like Tsunoda, like, okay, we've got seven races left. Can he do something similar again? Just get top tens maybe? Because really, he sort of helped that out for stopping Norris from getting up. So they got their value there yesterday from Tsunoda and obviously Lawson in the second team as well. But, you know... The stories go that once Horner left, that they were finding out that Max was always getting the best parts, which he was the best driver, the number one driver, so to speak. But they were really neglecting the other car, like literally neglecting it in so many ways. Now he's starting to get...
seen that before.
Yeah, but just... So, look, he's turning around a little bit, I suppose. But, look, for him, it's Q3. That's it. And I think if he keeps going in Q3 and gets third row, fourth row, if that's the measurement, and... It might be a chance, but the resistance, it's too hard to resist putting Hadjar up, I think. Tom, what do you think on that?
I think it's already done. I think he's signed, to be honest. Yeah. That's the word on the street. But I think Hadjar's a more unique individual. I think Tsunoda's been around for, six years now.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's he shown? He's won fifth place.
Yeah. Not a podium, has he?
No, he hasn't had a podium. No.
So he's had his chance.
I was saying this from the start. Hadjar's first year of the season. Amazing, you know? I know.
Yeah. So different kettle of fish. I think you've just got to give him the shot, really. And it's going to be a different cars. It's a whole different
development.
That's right.
We haven't changed much since 2020, you know, 2 and 3. So
I think for the trajectory for Hadjar, the big positive, and this is what I would do, is at the end of the day, he's a rookie.
Yeah.
Okay. So really, there's no reference. We talked about this before.
Blank canvas.
We've talked about this before with motorbike and MotoGP and stuff. So really... He's not fearing anything.
That's true.
I want to be in the best team. Well, the A team is the best team. That's how he'd be looking at it.
Yep.
He's not going, I don't want to go up against Max. Don't put me up just yet. And, you know, he's hungry as anything. And sure, look at his turnaround from Melbourne when he crashed out in the warm-up lap and was crying back to the garage. And look at him now. He's just full of beans. So
but I think that's the right team to have, is to have someone in new rules, new regs. You've got Max, who's an old dog now, that's been there, done that. He's clearly the best driver in the grid. And then you've got your next young gun as a rookie, who's a blank canvas.
Yeah.
But then you have to stick with that. You got to stick with that. That's your long-term plan. Like having those two drivers, your long-term plan, because you need to build consistency.
Well, I think because if you look back, you know, the Gaslys, the Albons, the list goes on. Like those guys... were in F1 already, okay, for a couple of years with other teams. Then they got into the Red Bull team, or they're from the junior team. They spent probably two years in the junior team or other teams and then came to the main team, and that's where they just flopped. It was, we're talking about a rookie here who's, like you said, just coming straight into the sport for the first time, and he's just absorbing everything. And you've seen him. Like, he's, to me, he's been the standout rookie. Tom, would you agree?
For me, yeah, I think Bortoletto.
Bortoletto's been good.
Well, he's come good. He started. Bortoletto started bad, had crashes and stuff, but Bortoletto now is just wiping the floor.
They've all been pretty impressive, let's be honest. I
mean, they have.
We've had this amount of rookies for a long time.
Five. Yeah.
And remember, Bortoletto's on that Sauber, which has been a dog of a car for a long time.
As you said, James, you measured against your teammate.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's why to me, Hadja as a rookie, just the results he's got and putting that car, like he's put it in Q3 so many times, hasn't he, you know?
Oh, yeah. So he's been incredible. And now Lawson as well. I mean, he struggled this year. Yeah. But he's
been on the merry-go-round. See, this is the thing. When you're on this merry-go-round and going to the big team, they expect you. Well, you've been in the sport, you're a seasoned campaigner.
Team was a lot different, though. You know, 6 months ago when Lawson was in that with Christian Horner and the dynamics of that again, it's completely changed again.
Yeah.
Yep. How much has this Menkes guy changed things for you, Dan?
Because I think he's come with a fresh approach. He's come with a fresh approach. You know, he's just letting people do their job. I mean, Horner was the mouthpiece. We all know that. Okay, he was a spokesperson, but this new guy, I think he's come with some fresh blood. You know, that's what they put in there. It was a no-brainer, and I think so far so good. You know. He mentioned something after Monza about the setup that Max tried, and they were arguing apparently in one of the debriefs, and he said well that's what he wants to do, let him, you know, I mean, not Max, they wouldn't go against Max, but just he was like, let's just open slather, let's just do this, you know. So it wasn't as sort of regimental, political, with going through the steps of the management, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's been a good move. They look like a new team.
Yeah.
And I think the media stopped that chatter, and as soon as the media stops the chatter, the pressure goes off and you can concentrate on winning. And
two wins in a row.
And now we're seeing it. Now the car, they're bringing improvements to the car. So it's almost like a fresh start, like you just said, Tom. It's like, wow. Because before there was always that thing hanging over Horner, wasn't it, with that situation last year with the team member, and then there's the Yoss and Horner thing and...
Horny for porn. Yeah, I think it's exciting, and I think it's for me, Max winning the last two races is just kicked up the notch of the year, which has been good.
We need it. You need someone to have a kick up the ass, and that's Max is the kick up the ass for the two McLaren boys. Obviously,
it's just a pity he got taken out in Austria that first lap, because it wasn't, maybe I'm probably not going to win, but there was points there for him that day, podium that day for sure, you know. And now it's coming back a little bit because Oscar's had a bad race, but I'll say it again, just one more, if you know, for the juice to flow, if Oscar, I don't want to wish bad luck, but if they have one more bad race, Max is right back in this. He's right back in it. He really is. You know, it's 70 points. It's only 10 points a race. Now, can he win all of them? Probably not, of course not. But 4 or 5, I think, is a really good chance. Mm. But
God, big call.
You know, well, I think so. You know, McLaren's going to struggle at Vegas, okay? And when I mean struggle, the Ferrari might even beat them there. And if Max takes it, this is where some of these wins he's going to have, they mightn't be second and third, like we think. Okay, in Vegas, that's...
Well, remember, I think Max won with that broken front wing. Like, he had, like, a nothing car underneath him and still won in Vegas. Oh, no grip. Like, truck had no grip.
Just Brazil's Brazil, right?
Mm. Yeah.
The wet.
Yeah, he's always amazing in Brazil as well.
It always brings out the best drivers, though, Brazil, doesn't it? F1 going to V8. Obviously, it's 90% done. It hasn't officially come out.
Yeah,
but
I didn't
exciting.
Know this. Tom broke this before.
Tom, one last thing off ya. I don't care. I actually don't care about this at all. All I care about is there any sound coming out of the butts of these bikes. That's all I care about. It can be a V3. Well, as long as it sounds like a V10, I don't care.
You never saw a V8 or a V10.
I've seen a Minardi go around once. The V10.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, it's great news. Probably the best news we've had in a very long time towards Formula One future. And I've said this for a long time as well, that this fully sustainable fuel, man-made fuel, is going to be the future in both road cars and race cars. And this is what they've developed. They're developing it over the next few years in Formula One. They're developing it in MotoGP as well.
Yeah, yeah.
MotoGP is going to a full sustainable fuel from 27 as well. Yeah. So that's the future. And why not? Let's put big engines back in the cars, run them off fully sustainable fuel. That's the future for this sport.
But do you know, out of anything, again, I'm going back to the question, is there going to be sound?
There'll be good sound.
It's going to be loud, James. It's going to be loud.
I hope so.
No, James, it will be loud.
Yeah, but I appreciate that, but the amount of times I've been let down on this subject.
No, you can't make a quiet V8.
I'm sure Formula One can. They've got two fluff drivers that can't even look at each other in the eye because of... Anyway, let's save that for Patreon.
I get why you're being cynical.
I'm being very cynical. I can understand why. A lot of our fans will
be the same. You've been robbed of racing, and they've been robbed of racing cars. Yes. I hear what you're saying.
And so that's all I'm saying is there is a world right now where there could be a quiet V8 Formula One car.
Not happening, mate.
Not happening. Nah. It's going to be loud. It's going to be... It's not going to be like screaming...
They'll be loud.
Yeah, they're loud. Yeah.
This is all conjecture. Remember, this is all conjecture from you two.
No, it's fact.
We've lived it, mate. Like, we've seen these cars.
This is different. 2010 is a whole lot different to 2031 or whenever they're coming out.
Okay.
It's a big difference. That's all I'm saying is I just wouldn't be surprised. Again, I'm being cynical. I hope I'm wrong.
Glass half empty kind of guy.
A
glass quarter.
You know what people say that? They're realists. But I pray to God, I hope I'm wrong. But all I'm saying, if anyone is going to make a quiet V8, it's going to be Formula One.
Look,
in today's day.
Liberty's come in. They've woke up, smelt the coffee. They've realized, you know what? It's about the show.
Yeah, okay? But the show's already huge. They're already making so much money.
No, they are making money, okay? But the product doesn't mean the product's good. Okay, they're making the show on the back of the Drive to Survive.
Does it matter?
Okay. Well, mate, you know, you want to see exciting. Yeah, this is the pinnacle of motorsport. F1 is the pinnacle. So, you know, I get they went down this path of the hybrid and we've got these V6s and what they are now. But somewhere along this way, because this got tabled middle of last year, I think, and I didn't think it would get up because Audi was pushing back, saying, well, if you go down this way, we're not coming in. And I was like, You know, they want more manufacturers, but they've somehow overridden this because I thought Audi was staunch because they're like, no, we're about the future where the engines are going with the hybrids and stuff. So, you know, to make this decision is telling me, yeah, sure, it's 6-7 years away that, you know, it's about that excitement. I want to bring that because, you know, you just look at the old videos, you look at these Minardis that go around and stuff. Mate, when the whole grid is, you've got no idea how crazy it sounds when there's 20 cars all revving their fucking tits off.
Look, I'm with you. Like, I don't disagree at all. All I'm saying is I'm nervous to be let down. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, this is hot off the press. Ooh. What the new V8's engines will look like in 2031. A 2.4-litre V8, internal combustion engine running on fully sustainable fuel.
Right.
A hybrid system will be included with the vehicle, but only 10% of the power will be from the hybrid system. The engines will rev up to 16,000 RPM, producing approximately 880 brake horsepower. So 16,000 RPM is up towards zone 3.
Red line 17,000, Tom.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Anyway, that sounds pretty good to me.
It's exciting. It's really exciting. And I don't want to be a glass half empty person, but I'm just trying to see both sides of it because I know that's exactly what our fans will be thinking at the same time, that's for sure.
So I think the old V8s, Tom, were 3 litres for memory. So they went 3.5 litre, brought them down to 3 litres, and then they dropped the cylinders along the way. So it was V12s, V10s, and then V8s, but yeah, it went down to 3 litres. So 2.4, did you say, Tom?
Correct.
Yeah, 16,000, that's decent. That's decent.
It'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to the day
that Williams screaming down the front straight, 20,000 RPM, I think they peaked that.
The BMW. Yeah. That was the most powerful
2004.
Engine. Yeah, most powerful five, engine ever built.
That's all right, yeah.
We'll never get back to that stage, but this is the step in the right direction.
Well, look, as long as it's a step in the right direction, it's...
Because in my opinion, next year's a step in the wrong direction. 50% of the power will 100%. Be electric next year.
No, good. It's too much. No, good. Which makes you wonder why they even... I still don't get why they've gone down this path for next year, but...
Pressure.
Yeah, because of the manufacturers. Mm. This is what dictates it all. And just a quick story, like back, I went to Austin a couple of times for the F1, and one year there, because it was new to the city and stuff, this was the second year they had it, 11. Anyway, they had the old engines, and when they brought the new hybrid engines in 14 out, they were doing a promo downtown and they used an old F1 car, an old Red Bull car from like 4 years ago earlier. And so this Red Bull screaming up and down the main drag in front of Congress and they closed the streets and all the, oh, wow, this is amazing. You know, so all these Americans went and bought tickets and rocked up. They're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
You know, where's the sound?
Yeah. Well, Sam,
James, bro, you're on the scene, mates. That's what you're talking about. Yeah. You got ripped. They got ripped. They're like, well, this is not what we saw yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought of that because it's supposed to be a promotion.
It's a great point.
You think, oh, we're going to go watch this tomorrow. And they get there and this mouse fucking drives past.
You can talk as the whole grid drives past. That's all I'm saying is, yeah, I'm just, it's, I don't know. Like, I hope it is loud and you can't hear yourself think in pit lane or when they're driving past. That's how it should be because it's all about the show. It's all about the experience. But what I'm saying is Formula One, and Tom said this before, Formula One is as big as it's ever been. It is a monster. It's global. Yeah. It's huge. It's captured all the markets and it's captured it without the sound. So that's all I'm saying is they don't need the sound to sell tickets anymore. T-Shavs, I'm rolling around in a bit of a stinky car at the moment. How can you help me?
Doesn't surprise me, mate. Doesn't surprise me. James, I have the product for you, my friend. We have Motorsport Republica air fresheners. All your favorite drivers and riders.
Phil Marquez, Rossi, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri.
All the famous ones we have. We've also got t-shirts in stock. So if you want to go run in your Motorsport Republica t-shirt, James, you're more than welcome to.
Can I sink beers in it?
You can do anything you want with it.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
So jump on to motorsportrepublica.com.au. And guys, it supports us. It supports the pod. And we really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. They need the sound of everyone's opinion and every driver's opinion and what the wags are doing to sell tickets. It's the cold, hard truth. They don't need the sound of a V10 BMW Sauber with 20,000 revs because the game's changed, but I get it. You've experienced it. I've seen it. Yeah. I get it, and I agree with you. I know we're going around in circles. We're on the same page. But from their perspective, they're like, oh, and maybe some new hotshot CEO that's never seen racing before goes, you know, why do I need to add this in? When, you know, I could hear myself think in pit lane. And I'm just trying to just think at it outside the box
of
it.
The shock of that first year with these hybrids, we're sitting on pitch straight where we've always sat, and you're watching the screen, for going around the lap, and you didn't, it's only when you saw them, oh my God, there they are, because you didn't hear them coming.
Yeah.
Like it's only, because in the past, like, and you get closer and you're getting ready to see them.
It was the anticipation.
It was. And they're like, oh my God, and it wasn't like right there. Oh, there they are. And you just like, you went and sort of a bit numb. You're like, what the hell? Like, it was just the weirdest experience because you'd been so accustomed to hearing them getting, coming around the last corner and then the sound would get louder and louder. And it's vroom.
Yeah,
like they were literally vacuum cleaners. It was just abysmal.
It sucks. And the good thing about street circuits is hearing those V10s or V8s through the whole city reverberating off buildings.
Yeah.
You know, that's a part of the experience as well. But you know, when free practice is on or when qualifying's 100%. On, it's a whole experience for the city. Yeah. You can hear it 15 kilometers out in the outer suburbs as well, which is a crazy good thing. Yeah. And even when they had the Minardi do that two-seater hot lap, you could hear it start in its pit box. Yeah. Like, and then it's as Tom said, it's the anticipation of all those cars coming past. And it's not just the sounds, it's the whole experience almost goes through your body.
Well, that's what
it's like going to the drags.
And back to the gladiator sport scenario that we talked about there, James. Like, that's why seeing two cars going into a corner dicing and they're screaming, the engines are the maximum revs, that just adds to that sensation, you know, of what you're watching.
Here's a question for you. So, and Tom and I, you probably heard Tom and I talk about this a lot, but I would like to get your opinion on it. And this works with all motorsports. Do you care if these cars or bikes, whatever, are breaking lap records? Or would you rather just have harder, better racing with, and then let's add the sound into it for Formula One?
Look,
do you care about lap records?
No, you're sort of doing, you don't. But no, at the cost of racing, you just want to see racing. You want to see close racing. So, you know, I think now that Albert Park, before they change a track, they've gone something like 7 seconds faster when they first went around there, but then they slow the cars again, then they chip away again. So really, it's not about how fast they go. Because really, I've been saying forever, you buy a ticket at Melbourne or buy a ticket in, when you sit on a pitch straight, you can't tell the difference between 350 or 300. You can't tell the difference. And that's why it's better to go around the corners for the practice sessions and see. Then you'll see the difference with the drivers of who's pushing, who's not pushing. So speed-wise, you don't notice it. You just...
Fair enough.
You don't. I don't think you do.
No, I'm with you. I don't care. I don't really care. I'd rather to watch better racing on TV. We're going to talk about a GP.
Yeah, let's go into that.
Motegi is on this weekend, Mark is going to equal a Valentino's record. He's about to do 9 world titles.
Unbelievable. Oh, 7.
7, apparently.
What's
going
on there?
Yeah, I know.
What's
it's going on there? It's pretty stupid.
I've called for this for years. Tom has called.
So hang on. So you're for this, Tom?
Oh, I've been for this forever.
He has been.
Can you elaborate just a little bit
about... Okay, so for example... who's currently on the F1 grid? Who's won an F2 championship? Oscar Piastri. So Oscar Piastri is a world champion.
Leclerc, Russell. Yeah.
So they're going around.
They've won F3s.
Yeah, they're two-time world champions. Doesn't make sense. If you're a world champion, you have to be at the pinnacle of the sport. MotoGP is the pinnacle. He's going to be a 7-time world champion.
Oh. Yes, let the boy watch. Let the boy watch.
Pour some like honey down your throat.
Like his daddy's daddy. Yeah. Okay, I get what he's saying. I've had a rebuttal to this. Is F2 and F3 haven't gone to every single round like Moto2 and Moto3?
No, of course not.
Moto2 and Moto3 follows a circuit, and you watch that every fan watches that a whole lot more closely. And there's reasons before that because the reasons are it's F2, F3, it's a whole day of watching TV, watching it anyway, and they don't go to the same circuit. So.
Yeah, and look, the other thing too, it's a little bit devalued. I mean, the great drives always shine, but, you know, it's a pay series.
Mm.
So F2 and F3, you've got to have money to drive.
Yeah.
So that's half the grid is only there because they've got cash, so to speak. Having said that, the cream still rises, but the problem with those two series, again, it's not relating to what you're saying, but it's all this reverse grid. You can't get that consistent sort of people shining all the time because they're mixing the grids up and stuff. But look, for me, watching motorbikes, I thought, you know, 7-time champ, 9-time, he's won the 2 and the 250s. Because this is the thing. You look at Max Biaggi, right? So he's a 4-time champion.
Yep, on the 250s.
But they're all 250s.
Mm.
So, but yet, this is to Tom's point. You know, he's a world champion. Of course he's a world champion, but do you get what I'm saying? Like, he's come to MotoGP, and if he had a 1-1, they'd be getting called a 5-time champion.
I agree with that. It's almost like you've won if you've won a 125 and a 250 or a Moto3, Moto2, they're only unlocked as world championships until you win a MotoGP championship.
That's my point.
This is my point. I know that's what you're trying to say. So like, if you look at Max Biaggi, you go, no, he's not a world champion. But if he won a MotoGP... He's 5-time world champion. Like, that's 5-time, 5-time. That's how it kind of works, which is like an unwritten rule, but everyone understands
it. I think the thing here is, and this is to your point, right? I think the thing is, because all these guys we're talking about, they've all done it. So basically, you do not come into MotoGP unless you have won both championships.
What rider hasn't done that?
That's my point.
There's one rider that has done that. You know who?
Who hasn't won either one.
Correct. Tom knows.
Who is it?
Nicky Hayden.
Okay. Come from America, okay. But yeah, what I'm trying
unusual.
To say.
No. It's very unusual. And I agree with what you're saying.
Because they're all this familiar, as Tom would say, they're all familiar.
Guess who else hasn't done that?
There's another one.
Casey Stoner.
He
didn't win. He started in 250s, then went back to 125s, fought for a title 125s and 250s, and then didn't win it. But Danny Pedrosa won everything in the lightweight classes.
But this is the thing, you know, and I'm sure it's just not. I think the point is it's not automatic. Just because you become 125 and 250, you just don't next it because there's lots of, on the other side of the coin. There's lots that have won both but done nothing in MotoGP, isn't there?
Yeah.
So. I think it's because it's all one inclusive series. And what I mean by that is that, like, all these guys we're talking about, they're all raced against each other in the 125. Last year when Bagnaia and Martin were going for the championship, or the year before when they were going for it, we started seeing this old footage of them two in Moto2 together. You helped me out.
Yeah, they were Moto3 teammates.
See what I mean? So the fact that they've all raced together through these series and beat each other, that's why I think it's inclusive.
And I think it should be inclusive.
Another interesting one to that point before, Hayden Stoner, is
go on.
Fabio Quartararo.
Yeah,
never
good
won
point.
Moto3,
yep, yep.
Won one race in Moto2 and then became a MotoGP world champion.
Yep, that's another one. We missed that one. Good job.
So I think the thing that doesn't sit well with me is that They've made this announcement on the eve of him about to become a nine-time world champion. So it's just fucking ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
He had the eight ball.
Excuse me?
He had the eight ball. When he won
got offered that on Saturday night.
Yeah. We had the eight ball for the eighth title, right? So now what is he? They put number seven up.
Yeah,
I know. I'm like, well, I've already been here, mate.
Yeah, I know.
Well, what are you telling us?
You almost have to restart it after you don't have a MotoGP, yeah. Like a world, like a multiple.
Rossi's got in their ears.
What was that?
I think Rossi's got into their ears.
There's already threads about that. There's already threads about that.
He's actually on the board of Liberty. If you didn't know, he's been signed. So.
He's like he's the Italian sector.
They've both got the same amount in both all categories. Yeah, I know you're having a joke there, but
no, he's not.
That's the bit to me. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like. He's about to become nine time, and you want to, they're gonna force the commentators. Oh, seven times.
No, it's stupid. Or they at least should have done it just on the next year, like not on the eve of Mark winning a title. Anyway, we're gonna talk about that.
Sorry,
all day. It's dumb. It's very dumb. But what do you think? I don't know. We've had you on once, I think, through the season. I want your thoughts on Mark's so far this year. Is it his best year of all time in your own humble opinion?
It's right up there. I think, is it? I think you got to factor in, now that we've got sprints, so now we've got two races a weekend, and the fact is he's won all of those bar two. Okay?
Yeah.
I don't know, like, you look at 19, you look at 14.
When we were in Buriam, all the way back in Thailand, you know, we and the Marcus stand together, and we watched that. We watched that incredible win and Alex as well.
Yeah.
It was interesting being there then, and you know, Bags got third. I still definitely didn't expect to see what we were about to see for the rest of the year. I don't know if you had that same type of inkling.
I thought that after testing, to be honest. I thought after Sepang, how Wei was talking about the bike and just how he was performing there, because that is one of his bogey tracks. Okay, and this is the other myth busted this year. There's no, all these bogey tracks that he had was related to the front end of that bike, except for Barcelona. He's just no good there. But those other tracks that he's supposed to struggle was all because the Honda was a front end bike and that just didn't work on those tracks. And when he came out of Sepang and he was on it every day and relaxed about it, I was like, you know what? I think he's just going to bust this thing wide open. Do I think to this degree? No, even me as the one-eyed Marquez fan that I am, I didn't think it'd be to this level. But that goes back to the struggle that he's on the other side of the garage that we're all pretty shocked by, really. But he's just riding differently, isn't he? He's thinking, but then he still has that fire. And that's Davizioso said it yesterday, guys. His only downfall was that he can't help himself.
Yeah.
If that's a downfall. But that's a pure racer.
That's something you almost can't train.
That's right. You can't untrain that.
Yeah.
You can't, that's just instinct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable. It really is. It really is unbelievable what he has done.
And coming back from the injury.
Well, this is the thing. I think this is what adds to it. He was up for the Laureus Award this year for biggest comeback. But really, he was never really going to get it because he hasn't won anything.
Mm.
They gave it to a gymnast, girl from the gymnastics team in the Olympics or something, in the World Championships, because she pretty much had a car. Well, you know, but next year he'll definitely get that award.
Mm.
You know, once he becomes champion this year, that will be the biggest comeback, you know.
It's the biggest comeback in at least motorsport history.
Yeah, well, since Doohan.
Since Doohan.
But I don't know, mate. It's just, you know, what we're watching here, we've just got to be thankful that he did choose to keep going.
It's exciting.
He makes the sport.
Do you think he makes it more exciting? 100%. Yeah, I agree. I think engagement of MotoGP, everything is still all the way up, even if he's dominating, whether he's loved or hated. And I think he's almost more loved now than hated, you know, since the whole Rossi thing 10 years ago.
That's because people now have separated their emotions. Going, you know what? Look at the fucking hell this guy's been through.
In a determination.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, to get back off the canvas, I'll give a good example. I mean, Margie started watching MotoGP when was it? I think it was 2-3 years ago. When Quartararo and Espargaro had the white hair at Silverstone. Remember they bleached their hair? This is when Marquez was out with his surgery, and I said to her, "Oh, look, there's this guy I follow. He's not racing at the moment." You know, I said, "But when he comes back, you're going to understand a whole different picture here." And so she's watching and she's like, "Oh, well, I think that guy looks all right." You know, she's looking at Fabio and, you know, all the rest of it. He's not. I said, "He's pretty good." And then when Marquez came back in his first race, and he's on the shitbox Honda, right? And he's putting a third or his fourth. And she said, "This guy, this is all they talk about." And that's coming from someone who's just not knowing much about the sport. And she picked up, and I thought that was an interesting observation, like, because she's like, "This guy, this is all they talk about. They talk about this guy all the bloody time." Oh, Marquez, and we're just accustomed to it. Because all race, all they talk about, because when he's up the front and he's dicing, but although that was really interesting coming from somebody who's watched half a dozen to a dozen races, with him not being there.
It's very interesting that you say that, because I've had the exact same experience of my missus. The exact same experience, but she started watching it this year, and I didn't tell her to go for anyone. Yeah. I said the same thing. I like this guy. Yeah. This is a bit about him. This is his brother. This is Pekka Bagnaia. And I was kind of just running with it. And for some reason, she's only gravitated to him. And it's obviously because they talk about him. And I kind of asked her as well, like, you know, why him? And she's like, because he's just the most exciting one. He's the most exciting one to watch. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. So this is proof of what we're talking about. You know, love him or hate him, he's box office.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
right.
And you look at, you look at those 4 years without him, and we'll talk about those in 10 years from now when he finally does give it up, those 4 years or 5 years when he wasn't there, how lucky we were to see championships that were half decent, in the sense we, you know, we had a showdown between, you know, Quartararo and Bagnaia 1 year, then we had
Martin.
We had the famous 2020, the 10-pin bowling year, I used to call it, because no one wanted to win a race that year. Everyone was crashing. But you look, because now he's come back to what he's done. It is boring, to be honest. Of course he's going to win, you know.
I know, but it...
I don't mean boring. I'm talking about the people that say this.
But it's still, for some reason, even when he's winning, the racing can still be exciting, whether there's someone, he's following someone.
Yeah, but what it is, and we saw it at Misano in the sprint race, right? The thing about this guy, we're all, under a bit of a spell, because at any given moment, he can throw it down the road.
Yes, I agree with that. I 100% agree with that. But
less so more than ever now.
But I think definitely less so than ever. And I was speaking about this time a couple of weeks ago. I said, before Misano, before he crashed it, I said, I'm watching Mark, and his whole career, I've watched him thinking that exact thing. He could lose the front or high side himself to the space station and back, and that would be it. But for some reason, since, you know... you know, he started his win streak in Aragon. He hadn't even looked like crashing until Misano. And then, okay, he admitted he just, you know, went too hard, was too hot-headed, whatever.
But it shows that if it was on the 24, he doesn't crash.
Mm.
Okay? That's the difference here. They've all said this. Okay? If he was on the 24, he doesn't have that crash. This is how hard this 25 is to ride.
Well, going to that, what do you think of Pekka Bagnaia?
Look, I last time I was on here, I said, mate, my concern was this guy wasn't turning it around, and we were coming up to his favourite tracks, and if he doesn't pull the pin, he's going to be in strife. And here we are. Like,
it's getting worse and worse as we keep talking. And I hate keeping the harp on it, but it's getting worse and worse.
You know, I don't know what to say. Like, it's just shocking. We all thought or wanted, expected that these two would have a ding-dong centre prost type scenario where they're battling for the championship, fighting for race wins.
We got seven laps of Mugello and that was it.
Yeah, and there's been other couple of races too where the first two laps he's shown something, but then this way he drops off. He just drops back like a pin, doesn't he? Drops like, you know, only 15.
Or can't qualify at the moment.
It's a shame. I don't know. I don't know what to say, mate. Because really, what is any of this moving ahead? Mark will get crowned this weekend, more than likely.
But what's he have to do? Is it 3 points ahead of Alex?
Two or three
points ahead of Alex, isn't it? Which is just going to happen.
Is any of this changing next year?
Huh?
Is any of this changing next year? Is anybody betting this guy next year?
No.
Tom?
No. Tom's shaking his head. No way. No, I definitely don't think so.
So that's back to Pecco's point. So look at the mountain Pecco's got to climb. Right, we've just said now, no one's beating this guy next year, as it is, right? I'm sure we're going to get races for Aprilia and KTM do something pretty special, and he'll get beat on race day. He will.
The gap between Ducati and Aprilia and Ducati and KTM will close.
Yeah, but we're getting... But that point we're talking about here is Pecco.
Yeah.
So the point I'm getting at is this, right? We've just said no one's getting close to this guy even next year. Mm. Maybe in Aprilia, mate, but is Pecco getting...
I think the gap will close, but I don't think anyone's getting close to him. And you know what's a telling sign in all this? And I said this at the start of the season, is how Bagnaia spoke about Mark. He almost, and this is before this is before he wasn't getting podiums. Pecco was still getting seconds or thirds. And even when he Remember that that had that whole kerfuffle on Coda, where obviously he crashed and lost, but they were on the grid. And Mark ran off and he chased, and he said he was a conductor.
But
what I'm saying is he started this whole thing, and Bagnaia is like, Mark's the fastest, he's the smartest, I'm following him. And I'm just thinking, as a competitor, I just felt like, even from testing and from Thailand, he was beat. Just the way he was even acting in Parc Fermé, or like he just, it's just like Mark, and this is what we go back to when we talk about the fluff. Like Mark has no fluff. Like he doesn't care. When the visor's down, it's his championship. It's his race to win. It's his race to lose. And he is the, and he does not care. He has zero fucks for anyone else.
And that's what's happened. If he's done one thing this year, he's gone back to that dominant level. And I don't mean dominant by the margins he's winning by, but he's back in all their heads now, and they're just going, well, we'll just try and come second.
Because, well, that's exactly right.
2020, when he got injured, they all shit themselves.
Clearly, because they were like, fuck.
No, because they were like, oh, I got a chance now. Yeah. And I'm in the lead. What do I do now? And next minute, they're down the road. This happened race after, because all of a sudden, the guy that was impregnable and untouchable was no longer there. They all had this, and they, but they were just, they got the better of him. This happened in 99, Tom, with the shoe, when he broke his leg. You know, those next four or five races, people had a chance to win races and they just started crashing. Like, because, oh my God, the shoe's not here. What do we do? It's like he was the glue to it all. But they all, because they're so, like, in the, those these type of drivers and riders are so dominant. They're in their heads. They'd already defeated. That's what you're talking about, Coda. Like, you're saying that and the flag hasn't even dropped yet.
Yeah.
You already lost.
Yeah. Okay, so, I think Mark was in everyone's heads. If not before round one, definitely after Thailand. And I think I think the writing was on the wall, maybe for them, maybe not so much for fans, and maybe they don't want to believe it or whatever, which is totally fair. But Mark just mentally has the edge over everyone, whether it's, you know, and Marco Bezzecchi came out and said, and maybe he didn't mean it to sound like this, but he said, when I saw my pit board change to Mark 0.8 behind me, my stomach sank. Because he already knew halfway through a race that he was going to get caught and beat. And that's just the power Mark has. And this is what Tom and I always talk about, and our listeners will know this, is the absolute goats of the sport, whether whoever it is in Formula One or MotoGP, they have them psyched out before they're even trying to pass them. Yeah. Whether it's they know they can't pass Max because he will turn in on me or push me out, or they can't pass... Or they can't pass Mark because he's going to do the exact same thing, or he's going to pass him straight back, or Mark's already behind him and already putting the pressure on him a second down the road. Like, that's the difference between these guys. And I find it, I love it. I find it so fascinating, that mental aspect of motorsport, where these guys are against the best of the best in the world and they're still psyching them out on the track. And that's just by pure dominance. And Mark has pure dominance. And he even said, like, I do all my talking on the track. He doesn't do. He doesn't say shit in the media. He doesn't. He never has, and I don't think he never will. He just psychs everyone out on the track, and it's proven time and time again.
Yeah. Well, it's an old quote I remember when I was young. Like Alain Prost said, "Motorsport is 90% psychological."
Mm.
And when you think about that, you go, "Well, 90%." Yeah, but we've just you just talked about an exact example of that. You know, here's Mark, and the other thing I find about Mark is that. And I think it's another thing that gets in their heads. Like, you look at when two riders crash, you know, they're spitting the dummy, they're having a crack at each other. Whenever he gets crashed into, he never comes up and goes, oh, that dog over there took me out. Oh, well. And I think that's part of his psychology.
Do you know what a perfect example that is? 2023 Valencia.
Well, I was about to say that. Martin sent him to the moon that day, right? Got up, oh, yeah, if that was me, I would do the same.
Exactly.
And he's actually saying what they... And I think that adds to that psychology.
Yeah.
Psychological advantage. Because they're like, fuck, I can't rattle this guy. Like, I've just taken him out, purpose or otherwise. And he's like, oh, well, don't worry. Because he's basically saying, well, if I do this to you, don't come bitching to me. That's what's going on here. That's
exactly right. 100%. It's exactly right. And there's not really anyone that's ever been like that.
Yeah.
I don't think there's really anyone. Maybe Marco Simoncelli.
So the thing is, he's not a dirty rider. Right, but he just dives bombs people, and wrongly so sometimes. Like, I remember me having a sook one year at Jerez. I think they were, well, they told me this was last year. He just took him out at the last corner, bumped him out the way to get the extra spot. They didn't get, he probably, Mark should, probably should have got a penalty.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But me was crying for weeks about that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you two were teammates the year before, or two years earlier. And I'm thinking, this is where they, it gets to them, because they think, oh, how come he doesn't get in trouble? It's not that he plays the Mr. Nice Guy, but he just doesn't care when it comes to all that stuff, because he doesn't bitch. He doesn't. You don't see him running to Simon Crawford and, oh, that guy there, Simon.
You never will.
Simon. Whereas half these other guys, you know,
they freak out.
100%.
And even, and a funny example of that is Ducati have that riders race every, and he takes out Nicola Bulliger, which is Tom's favourite thing ever. Yeah. It's in like a fun race. It's a fun race. And Mark Marquez, in front of all the Italians, takes out Bulliger for third. He's not even winning the race. It's for third.
Severino.
He's pissed himself. It's so funny.
I remember that. That was funny.
It's... it's crazy.
They were getting upset. All the one-eyed Ducati, they were getting upset. Oh, Mark this, Mark that, you know.
I know. But it's the thing that you just cannot train. And that's why he is, I'm going to say, a nine-time world champion as of this Sunday. Because, like, you just can't train that. And because he doesn't bitch and moan is why it only works. And to be fair, like, he was reckless. He was reckless in Moto 2. And I loved it. And like,
what's
and
the
I,
fa- which, sorry to interrupt, which is the famous race? There was two. There was the one at Phillip Island where he rammed up someone's ass up over Lukey.
In Moto 2, yeah.
Is that Moto 2 or 3?
2.
Right? And then got put to the back of the grid at Valencia.
Yeah. Yes.
And won.
Yep. That, which that footage, there's an overhead aerial shot on a helicopter. Is and him on board, if you haven't seen that, is probably some of the best footage of motorcycle racing you can ever watch. Yeah. You can ever watch. It's like he was racing in that like it was a PlayStation on easy mode. It was incredible. And like, look, I'm a fan of everyone. I definitely am. I'm a fan of just excellence in sport. And
well, that's what we're admiring, mate. We are seeing pure excellence here.
And doing that as a 17, 18-year-old was just... something else. It was absolutely incredible to watch. So, and you know, it's for guys like Pecco, like I can see why someone like that could crumble, because you got this guy that comes in that just seems like there's no chink in his armor. You know, he's been to hell and back, and then he's won all these races. He's gonna win a title. It's gonna be one of the most dominant seasons ever. And you must just think,
and then
what do I, and the ego of him being Mr. Ducati, you've also got that aspect as well, Danby, where he was Mr. Ducati, he's Mr. Red, he is everything, and now you've got this young, it's not young, but this Spanish guy who's already done it all, but still seems to have more fire in his belly than ever.
It's Mark's team. It's happened overnight. Happened overnight. It's now Mark's team.
As Tom says, Tardozzi's in love with him. You can see it in his eyes.
But look, they were always in love with him.
They were.
Even when they were getting beaten by him, because they were just fascinated, like, my God, what is it going to take? Okay, we'll build a better bike. And they finally did build that better bike. But you could just see that with all those times, back in the chair and just, you know, swiveling every time he's about to pass Dovi or win a race, because they just, oh, he beat us again. But 100%, it was a love match made love in heaven there with the way Tardozzi's carrying on.
Loves him.
And these celebrations, like, they're not over the top, but they've got, you know, they're working hard. They're a team, and it just shows the closeness of everyone in that team. And, you know, and then you've got this guy on the other side of the garage just going,
which would mentally obliterate you anyway.
You'd be just sitting there going, what happened? You know, I was on the verge of being a three-time world champion. You know, okay, lost the title. Probably his own due because of his crashing on Sundays. This is Pecco.
Yeah.
Following year, can't ride the bike. And this other guy's saying, what are you talking about? Can ride it with one hand. And then I think before Misano or after, Pecco's like, oh, yeah, Mark's helping me now. So he's helping Pecco. He's you know. And I'm thinking, that are just also, who does, you know, they're supposed to be killing each other sort of thing. But Mark's that sort of person. You know what? We're teammates. We need two riders up there. This is what he's been saying. We need the two bikes up there.
But Mark would keep him at arm's length anyway until he gets too fast. And that would be
it. Yeah, but I don't think he'd care.
Yeah.
He wouldn't care about that. So what's it going to take, James? Like, we just mentioned next year about, no, we can't see this changing. Like, it's going to take Mark for this series to sort of get, I'm not going to say exciting, but he's going to have to go back to a bike that's under par, or be on a bike that's under par for us to see, because really it's the races where he's behind and you want to see him pass. I'm not on the last, I'm not Rossi style, but these processional wins. I'm not trying to talk him down here, but I'm saying to you that a Honda that's a half podium bike is more appealing to him than being on a dominant bike. This is what I'm alluding to. One day he will go back to that Honda.
Well, we had that question.
We asked that question,
and look, I've always been under that same fact of he win maybe two titles in Ducati and then he'll go back to Honda, and he's always had massive allegiances to Honda.
Yeah, yeah.
But just for some reason, I didn't expect him to gel so well for Ducati and the team, and how everyone's just open arms, and now he's Mr. Ducati, and now he's waving the Ducati flag and celebrations. And I kind of just look and I think, look, who knows? Who knows what the future holds? You know, nothing's set in stone, but I just think, God, I don't know, maybe this is his new home.
I think what I'm getting at, the point I was trying to make, is for him to get beaten, he has to be on a lesser bike.
Yeah, yeah,
is,
yeah.
Is my point. That's what I'm trying to say here. Like, because if all the bikes are equal, he's still, as you keep saying, got the 3/10 in the pocket.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, he's always got 3/10
in the
pocket.
You know, at any given corner, and Quartararo said this years ago, he goes, he went past me, he goes, the next corner he was half a second in front of me. And Quartararo's like, I'm going flat out here.
Mm.
And you just did that, like, with the leg in the air. So, I don't know. I'm not saying I want the competition. I'm just saying that this guy is just, because he's so much above everybody else, which we haven't seen before. We haven't seen this before.
No.
You're talking about how good he's been this year, but it's the level he's on. Like, beating himself in sprints. Oh, we beat himself in Misano, but Barcelona, well, Alex crashed. And then the Silverstone one, that's right, he got beat there. But just the fact on he's won, I mean, Martin's got the sprint record of 20.
Yeah,
Marquez is going to eclipse that probably end of the year or something. The way he's racking up these numbers this year alone, you know, so he's on the verge of 100 wins, right? Overall.
Yeah, he's on 98 now. Yeah.
No, it's not 99.
This
will be his 100th win.
Nah. Yeah, oh, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah,
you're the one that posted this.
Yeah, you're right. He's on 99. He's on 99. So he's got to win. If he wins, and then he wins a world, which is already a crazy feat.
Yeah, but it's just a scary thought. We've got 22 races next year, and even if he wins half of those, he's getting closer to Rossi's record. He said, oh, that's a bit out of reach. Well, I said, I didn't think so at the time. And, well, he's still got a couple more years. I mean, look, okay, aside from Marquez, I wanted to ask you, this resurgence from Aprilia and Bezzecchi, okay? So,
which I've been loving.
Yeah. So he's really
stepped up.
Clearly. But I think it's been more track specific so far. We need to see more from this Aprilia on these coming circuits that are coming up that are very different in various ways. Because if you look at Aprilia, they were supposed to be good at Barcelona on a low grip track. They were nowhere. And they're supposed to struggle on high grip tracks, and they were right at the front at Misano, which is the grippiest track of the year. So they are building, but I'm asking you, like, for the rest of this year, what's your expectation of Aprilia and Bezzecchi? Like, do you think that there's another...
Podium every race is on.
Every race.
Yeah, for Bezzecchi. Yes. Okay. Yeah, I think that's the expectation now. You've got a bike that I believe is a championship-winning bike with the right rider on it.
Mm.
And I think it's only building. And it's all credit to Marco Bezzecchi. Like I've said this whole year that he's had his resurgence. He is the fast guy. He's been one of the only riders with Alex to actually take it to Mark like he did in Misano.
And Assen.
That's right. And I think in Assen, Mark still had tenths in his pocket, where I think Misano was the weekend where Mark was pushing as hard as he could.
Yep.
And I just think, I really do think the Aprilia is there. Look, it's so hard to put him up against Mark Marquez because they're just so...
Well, again, we're just taking out the equation, mate. We've just spoken for the last 20 minutes about...
But if I'm going to say who's the second best rider on the grid right now, at the moment. And the second best form rider, it's going to be Marco Bezzecchi close by Alex Marquez.
Yeah. Because for sure.
I think he is the... Marco Bezzecchi's a man, and I think he's a man because he has turned Aprilia around. It's not, he just hasn't been given this bike. He's been given this bike. He didn't really like it at the start. He had the whole Jorge Martín situation. Mm-hmm. He was injured and crashed, didn't want to be at Aprilia. Then he had to basically take this team, which I've spoken about a lot, and then, you know, he had to shoulder this team he had to be the man to develop this bike, and he's done so. And he's the proofs of the pudding.
Well, it's fight or flight, as they say. I mean, the fact that Martin got injured twice and was out, this is how this opportunity came about. Like, this guy had to take the bull by the
sliding
horns.
Doors moment.
It was. It really was. Yeah. Because I think if Martin doesn't, he's probably happy probably just to sit in his shadow a bit and, oh, well, he's the world champion. But this has made him a rider, better rider than he was. You know, 2 years ago or last year, he was struggling on the GP.
Struggling.
Wasn't he? After the year before, but winning some races. But... And that's why no one really gave him much chance coming into this Aprilia bike against a fit Martin. But this is a different Bezzecchi.
And
this
it's good totally for him different. To go away from that. Remember, he stayed on the VR46 and stayed on the older bike, would have had a factory bike, would have been on a GP24 last year, stayed on the GP23, did nothing. So, like, you were like, stupid move. But for him to go on a factory Aprilia and then be his own man and be his own rider and done what he's had to do is been awesome. And now he's probably going to get third in the championship.
Yeah. That's the story of the year. To me, is the story of the year. The way he has jobbed with that team and that bike and become the leader, you know, and because it was thrusted upon him.
Yep.
It was thrusted upon him. So now KTM. So you spoke about the chains thing last week, about the chains going off, but like, it looked like Acosta was coming on a bit in that race. I reckon he was going to get third last week. They seem to be improving as well a bit there, James.
I think they've got a new aero package. So I think everyone is bridging the gap, whether it's Honda, KTM, Aprilia. They're all going to be bridging that gap to Ducati. The only one is Yamaha.
Well, again, they're...
Which is a whole thing and a whole separate...
They're jumping off the V4. Yeah. There's not too much going on there.
So everyone is bridging that gap, and... To be fair, everyone's got the talent. Like, you know, Quartararo's on the Yamaha. You've got Acosta on the KTM. You've got Bez and Martin on the Aprilia. Like, you've got Mir's world champion and Marini on the Honda. Like, there's enough talent there. And everyone is bridging that gap. It's just... MotoGP would look so different if it wasn't for Marc Marquez, but that's just how it is. But the KTM's coming, and the KTM's also pulling themselves out of the dark depths of shit and despair, for lack of better terms. But they are coming, and... You know, at the start of the year, like, we looked at KTM and Tech 3 and all these guys, we just thought, this is just a fucking write-off. They're not going to be...
It was just...
They might not be on the grid. Pedro Acosta is like the new... Yeah. Marc Marquez supposedly was looking for a ride at VR46, which is crazy they didn't sign him anyway, which is a whole other thing. But KTM have finally... Look, maybe they've found something. I hope it's not a false storm, but Andrea Bastianini's had his moments now. Maverick was fast before he got injured.
I think if Maverick doesn't get injured, he probably goes close to, I'm not going to say winning Barcelona, but it's unfortunate he was injured during a time when that bike was performing.
Yeah,
they got
right.
a double podium, I think, on one of the sprints. Or
if a fit Maverick's
on that bike, that's pushing for the win.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think... I just wanted to mention KTM because I know all the attention's on Aprilia and Bezzecchi because it's a great love story at the moment, what's going on there. But they seem to be nipping at the heels as well.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
Because all the riders are consistently getting 2 to 3 of them in Q2, which is your first sign, isn't it, that your bike is becoming a bit more even. It's not just that one guy and the other three are struggling.
Correct. Now, we're gonna keep talking about that in our extra chats and Patreon, but let's go through and do some hot takes. Dandy knows. Thank you for everyone putting in all their hot takes. You guys are amazing. Keep them coming in. It's a joy to read out, and hopefully you get your name read out at the same time. sorry, guys. At Caleb_Bedville. Even as a certified Max hater, Max is the only thing that will fix this championship. Which kind of goes back to our point, what we're talking about, which is kind of funny. I didn't even pick up on that.
So that's a certified Max hater saying that.
Certified Max hater saying that.
Well, then he must be a Norris fan or a Oscar fan, I'm going to assume.
Mm.
You know, so he's just basically repeating or expressing the frustration of what we're not supposed to be watching, as in of what we are watching.
Yep.
But the expectation shit, we just want this guy to come along and...
Yep.
Slap him around.
Well, exactly right. We want him to slap around. We want him to just put some C-U-N-T into this championship. Yeah. Exactly what we want to do, which is the Aussie's favourite word. At Lukey Kappa, this is a good one for you that's already on. You're on here. Would you say Max's year is comparable to Senna's versus Williams?
Senna Williams?
Senna versus the Williams.
Senna versus...
Tom.
So Senna, when he was in the McLaren, up against the Williams when they had the active suspension, et cetera,
No, not really, because that car was too advanced, the Williams, that is. I get what he's trying to say. The difference there is, I mean, Max has still got the most pole positions this year. So that just debunks that a bit, because the fact that he's still getting poles, whereas Senna, that active suspension Williams was just the craziest thing ever. It was just, I think he won two races for the year, Senna, and, barely got some thirds. The fact that Patrese, the second driver, was beating Senna by a long way tells you how good that car was.
It's Formula One for you.
It's a good take, actually.
Yeah, it was a good take. It's a good analogy.
Not to that extent.
I get what he's trying to say there, but it wasn't. Add another 50% on what we're seeing now.
Nicky D3604, or Mr. Hot Takes, we call him. The best way to judge 46 versus 93 is to wait for Mark to retire and let the short-term memory hype die. Which is, I like that, because it's good to, we always look back on nostalgia, and like Jorge Lorenzo is always a good one, cheeseburger, and then look back on the careers. I try and think that we're a bit more impartial, but maybe for all the, I think there's too much hatred for any of that hype to die down, but I don't know, it'll be an interesting one. You never bought into it all. Did you?
What's that?
Rossi versus Marquez.
No, I did, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, look, we're all Rossi fans. Everyone, there's not one person doesn't follow motorsports, not a Rossi tab once upon a time.
100%.
Okay? All of us. But at the end of the day, he went too long, okay? And this kid came in from the get-go, just had his measure.
It was always going to happen at one
point. No, but it's just the way that it happened. Like, because, 15 was the last championship Rossi was fighting for, and that was against Lorenzo. And the fact that with this whole 10-year anniversary of Sepang and Phillip Island, being talked about in these past month or so, because it's a 10-year...
Did you see Lorenzo's comments on it today? About how, he basically says it without saying it, thinks it's a kick, and how...
About Sepang. Yeah,
yeah, about Sepang, and kicked him off. And then Lorenzo was pushing for Rossi to be black flags because he was going for the championship. It's interesting.
So, look, back to that guy's point about the dust settling. unfortunately, you remember the end. And the end wasn't good for Rossi. He went too long. He was mid-pack. He was supposed to go 2 years at the Petronas and turned it up after one because he got the tap on the shoulder. They said, mate, you just because he was languishing.
Mm.
And it was sad to see. So I'm just going back to what you remember, and you talk about waiting to the end for Marquez. We just look at the end of Rossi. He didn't walk out on top.
No.
And it would have been, and it's hard for these guys. Shuey was the same. He's elite athletes. I'm not bagging Rossi here, but it's the hardest decision to make is when do you stop when you're that good? But for him, the signs were there, I thought. And that's what his legacy is a little bit, I'm not going to say tarnished.
I think it is because of the...
I didn't want to say it.
I think his legacy is tarnished with a lot of the fans. Fuck me, a lot of the fans.
Yeah, well, they just can't deal with it. I had some guy talk the other day and he's like, the Marquez is a good rider, but the cardinal sin of Phillip Island. I said, what are you talking about? And he's like, he stopped another rider from... He helped Lorenzo win. I'm like, that is bullshit.
I know,
like,
it's crazy. Watch the race.
This guy's older than me, and this is 10. I'm like, mate, build a bridge and jump off, mate. I said, this is 10 years ago.
But it didn't happen.
Yeah, like, we're getting into it, but sorry.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Back to Mark. When he does stop, it'll be at the top.
I don't know.
He's not somebody that's going to flounder around.
Mate, say that in 2005 about Valentino Rossi. In 2022, whenever he retired, he's going to be...
I think the difference with Rossi and Marquez, this is my two bobs, is that did Rossi really have any genuine competition? He outpsyched everybody, okay? And that just added to his ego. The only one that came along and stuck it to him was Lorenzo. Everybody else, he kicked them to the curb.
Casey Stoner?
Yeah.
Danny Pedrosa? Yeah, the aliens.
Yeah, I'm talking about for championships in and out. So he's won seven.
MotoGP.
So he's won seven.
Seven MotoGP, yeah. Premier class titles.
But I'm talking about his domination was different to Marquez because he used to play with the field.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's a bit of a. And that was good for us, but it's a different psychology.
Yeah, it's different. Okay? And it's a different sport.
They're both the same. They both just wanted to kill the opposition. But I'm starting to say that you look back now, it got the better of him. He started believing his own hype, you know, which made him go too long. You know, I just don't see Mark, because Mark's so grounded. I'm not saying Rossi wasn't, I didn't have his head up his ass, but Mark's just, you know, the fact that he turned down that Ducati contract 2 years ago because he wasn't sure if he still had it. You know, that's a very grounded, mentality for someone who's already a seven-time world champion or eight, whatever. And then you hear Tardozzi talk, he goes, mate, he's so humble. I can't believe a guy who's won so many titles. He's just, you know, whereas I think Rossi, it got to his head. Hence why he slowed down at Sepang. Like, what are you doing? Mikey Katsivoy, he was saying to Marquez that day. Anyway. Sorry.
I like it. Don't apologize.
Yeah, no, just
don't apologize.
I don't get this comparison because the end.
The Rossi, Italians are going to be coming at this studio hard.
That's Sebsi. Fine.
Well, remember, we've got our end of year show, which we're prepping for.
Yeah,
we've 10 year anniversary, Malaysia.
Mark versus
VR. But yeah. The thing is, we're trying not to talk about it till then.
But it always comes up. We'll do our hot takes and everything for it. It's going to be a big episode.
This is the end. When's this happening? The end of the year.
Yeah.
That'd be good. It's been talked about. There's been other pods that have covered that whole season.
Not us, mate. Not us.
No, I'm just saying. It's Oxley Bond, just quickly. Yeah. Oxley Bond did one a couple of weeks ago. They actually sat down, right, and they pushed record and watched it. They commentated on the race for 45 minutes and they gave all the insight of what was going on with the lap times, the tyres, and to try and disprove this theory about Remark.
Yeah, yeah. In Phillip Island.
Helping Lorenzo. And then Matt Oxley said, he goes, mate, I was barracking for Rossi that year because I knew it was his last chance to get a title. But that was fascinating in itself.
That's awesome.
To those two.
They're amazing.
But no, they'll give you technical stuff. Yeah, I look at the front tyre, look what's happening. What's happening this part of the race, Pete? Oh, blah, 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 blah. They weren't like, turn three, but they were talking about things that were going on that we wouldn't see.
Yeah.
It was really good.
No, that's I'll have to listen. Yeah, I'll have to listen to that. It's really good. All right, this is for you, Curdy. Your time to shine. And this is from our boy at Willie_Nels, number one reigning or could be our number one ticket holder for this year. Willie Nels, in contention. Does Ducati being so dominant in racing make them less cool on the street? Is anything now cooler? Now, Curdy is like our eyes in the sky type of street urban motorbike guy.
Eyes in the sky, like deer
in
headlights, sort of thing.
Yeah. So is Ducati being dominant MotoGP making them less cool, Curdy? Now you're the man to answer this because I don't know. I don't know what's cool anymore.
No, I don't think so.
Beautiful.
Ducati's.
Are they more cool? No. You're wearing a Ducati beanie right now. I'm looking at it.
Ducati beanie right now. No, I don't. I don't believe that. Not one bit. I'd say they're more common now.
I agree.
I don't think their cool factor has left them yet.
50% of the people in this room own a Ducati.
Yes, that is true. Danby right next year's got a Ducati.
Correct.
And they still look sexy as hell, even the newer models, even with the double-sided swing arm. I have noticed that there's an increase in Ducatis. Not the weekend that just went by before we went out for a ride, and there was quite a few Street Fighters out there. There was a Diavel, the new V4. That was quite a nice looker. I'd say the Euro emissions cutting hard on the exhaust sounds is probably the only thing that kills most Euro bikes.
What's a cool bike these days?
MV Agusta.
So still Italian, not still a Japanese Italian bike. It's just your opinion.
The only Jap bike that kind of interests me at the moment still is the Suzuki Gitana.
Okay.
That I find interesting. Honda CBR 1000 Hornet. It literally looks like a Street Fighter.
You know, well, at the hotel when Suzuki Gitana did their unveil, Tom looked at it and said, fuck, this is gay ass. And he grabbed his beer and walked straight out. He's like, he walked out and goes, I couldn't give a shit about this. And all these autistic people were like standing around looking at it. Do you remember that, Tom? Yeah. That's word for word as well.
If Envy Agusta got their act together and made reliable bikes, you'd probably see a bit more of them.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of the thrill and also the unease with Envy Agusta. It's like, I've got an Envy Agusta. Does it work? We'll find out. Ducati, you can get a Ducati now and you're mostly going, yeah, it's going to work. You'll be fine.
Never used to be like that, but yeah, they fixed that.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Curdy. That's well. We needed the eyes in the sky, mate.
Yeah, eyes in the sky.
At Bay Bikes, last hot take. Pecco will leave Ducati and won't ever be the same, either going to VR46 or a satellite team, Danby.
Look, I think he just rides it out. But having said that, if he's not coming second next year on that bike and beating all the other Ducatis, well, they're going to kick him out. Okay? Where does he go? That's for another pod.
But I've got a question for you for our Patreon, which I'll ask you very soon, but I want you to list me Ducati riders in 2026, 1-6. I might even ask Tom that as well.
Just one last thing before we finish. Do you reckon Ducati are going to have 6 factory 26 bikes next year? Yeah.
6? They got 4.
No, 6.
There's word on the street it might be 6.
Well, I just confirmed 4.
Okay.
4. So, Alex Marquez for Gresini, DGR for VR46 and 2 factory bikes. 4.
When was this? Today?
Today.
Okay.
And then the other two are going to be GP25s. So, Aldeguer and Morbidelli. Confirmed.
That's why you listen to Motorsport Republic.
That's why I listen to Motorsport Republic. That's why I want you boys to list me 1-6 of Ducati riders in our Patreon coming up right now. Danby, thanks for coming on, mate. Everyone, I think Tom's going to be a bit more on show for our Patreon coming up, so head to our Patreon.
Thanks,
the link is in our bio, Patreon Hot Takes. Thank you again. Thank you for our listeners.
Yeah, great, boys. Well done.
Thanks, guys. See you. Bye.